each character's car matches the color of his or her name and the game piece.
Nice.
I didn't know that. Random phone call guy shows up in a random phone call colored.
Hiya, plotters. Welcome to this month's podcast. My name is Naomi McQuaid.
This is Lydia Malcolm.
And I am Jen McQuaid. And you know what movie we're doing because you clicked on the thing.
Yes. Guys, you guys want to watch House on Haunted Hill this week? You want to?
I mean, there was a house called Hill House. And it looked kind of spooky.
Do you want to pull up to a mansion, Rocky Horror Picture sort of style? Do you want to do that?
Maybe you get caught in the rain a little bit.
Do you want to avoid watching movies based on the game Battleship?
Have you rewatched Super Mario Brothers too many times? And so you're like, what other game-based movie should I be watching? Hey, welcome to our review of the movie Clue.
Did you get a clue? I don't know why that came out that way.
I say leave it. I only know this movie from some random watching, some random day, some random time. I cannot tell you where I came into this movie, which is normally where we start.
Right. And like, this has always just kind of been a movie in my life. I mean, it's kind of up there with like Princess Bride and Willow in the sense of this has always been a movie that when it's on, I'm generally like, yeah, I'm going to drop everything to watch this.
You can't help but like not stop and be like, oh, this needs my attention because of whatever the thing is that's drawing you in at the time. You're like, dialogue, fantastic. Blocking, fantastic. Cinematography, fantastic. Plot, excellent. Like, there's no part where you aren't wrapped.
Actors. Like, this has Michael McKean in it.
I don't know.
It's from the guy from This is Spinal Tap.
Oh, I'm terrible. Yes, I know him well.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Right.
The guy that figures it all out in The Good Place.
Yeah. Doug Forsyth. I do. That's the thing. Like, random Forsyth, I think. I remember stupid. Like, why don't I've watched at least half a dozen, if not a dozen, of
Michael McKean movies. Like a Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman.
Yeah.
This is Spinal Tap.
Yeah. And
Short Circuit 2.
I don't know if I've ever... I watched Short Circuit a bazillion times. I don't know if I've ever watched Short Circuit 2.
Yeah.
I don't know. I honestly do not know.
There was a moment in the 80s where every sequel had to take place in New York or the big city, if it wasn't listed as New York. Like, it always starts in some rural area, like Gremlins does. It starts out in this nice rural community and then ends up in...
New York!
Yeah. But yeah, Michael McKean, very... prolific character actor.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. In everything I've ever seen him in. And it's so funny because he's often like very much the straight man, you know? Except for this movie.
Ba-dum-ba-dum-bum.
Okay, so background noise for me, background noise for Lydia. Enticing background noise, but how do you? Oh, Jen. Oh, please talk about your experience with this.
Oh, this isn't one that I saw in the theater when it came out.
Oh, yeah. What time did it come out?
Was it 85?
Mm-hmm. So naturally, I was two. Didn't happen to see this in the theater.
I didn't either, but I have several experiences relating to this movie. I remember watching it mostly when it would come on network television, or it seems like it was on like USA or something like that all the time. And there's a fitting tribute by a USA show to this movie that we'll talk a little bit about in Sean Facts, but... my history for this movie actually surrounds more of my introduction into drama class in ninth grade. We took the script. We ripped the script from online. And
it wasn't even like a script. You like jacked this movie script from the interwebs?
Yeah.
That's how you do it in high school drama, or in this case, junior high drama back in the 90s, which is now high school. Sorry, I'm complicating
it. Yeah, ninth grade is high school in Washington State. Mm-hmm. But you still go to a junior high to do it. We don't.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, so we were in the big leagues in ninth grade. We weren't the small little fish in the big ocean. We were
the
overgrown ferns in the little garden that shouldn't be there, I guess.
So you're telling me that you're a plant?
I was indeed a plant. I played Mr. Green in this play.
In my experience, but they're actually called a fruit.
There are some homophobic moments in this movie. And some, as you were pointing out, there's some misogynistic.
Oh, it's a sexist movie. Mm-hmm. It is not pro-sex worker either. But, okay, but also in the... Okay, so all of these things are mentioned, right? But they're not super maligned also, right?
I would say that nobody really escapes this movie without some sort of, like, you know, backhanded compliment in some way. Like, if you wanted to go ahead and say that Mr. Body was, like, the only one who wasn't really backhanded, but he does get murdered, like, twice, so...
You know, I think it's kind of interesting because, I mean, this movie takes place in
1954, which is during the Second Red Scare, McCarthyism, the Lavender Scare.
Which is funny because it's set, I mean, it was made in the 80s. So you'd think that we could,
There was a resurgence of, like, 50s theme nostalgia that hit the 1980s. Like, with Grease.
Grease is right out there. I would say that Back to the Future was right out mm-hmm. there. Like, we, for some reason, were like, oh, a simpler time. Right after World War II, when our anti-Semitism was, like, just under that curtain.
I don't know if you could really, like, they tried to redo the 80s, like, the last decade, but, like, everything that's happened recently, I don't, and, like, the fact that the 90s are, like, right before the turn of the millennium, I don't see us doing, like, a 90s resurgence.
I truly appreciate the fact that we can have an aesthetic resurgence and still as a society be like, but that was a problematic time, and, like, not take all of the stuff that came with it. Like, hey, you like shiny things? You like those weird sunglasses with the slats on them that don't actually fucking work? Yeah, no, wear those. But also know that, like, materialism in general and, like, applying vague stereotypes to people isn't really helpful.
I am kind of excited for Kevin Smith's He-Man. Have you seen the trailer for that?
No.
Like, legit, Prince Adam has, like, a magic girl transformation moment. And I was like, oh... Yay. Sorry. Off topic.
No, that's fine. I think, you know, I liked part of the reason I liked doing Cats was because it was a newer movie. I say, hey, we don't have to necessarily always do a nostalgic movie. We can certainly do, like, something newer, because I just imagine both of us, or all three of us, or all five of us, depending on which numbers you're counting, 1 + 2 + 1 + 2 + 1, yelling about a newer movie. Could you imagine if we did, like, Transformers or Transformers 3 or 8? What Transformers are we on?
James Gunn's Suicide Squad. I'm still hoping we'll do that. We don't have to do that. That's, like, super, that would be a lot.
I'm down. I like Suicide Squad, and I love the Harley Quinn, how Harley Quinn got her groove back.
the fabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Birds of Prey and the one fabulous emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Thank you.
Female forward, unlike this film. Yeah. Sorry, Jen, you were a plant. We were talking about fruits.
Well, it was the ninth grade in late 90s, so my character, Mr. Green, was written in as something not gay, but I was actually part Russian instead.
Oh, I thought it was communism, but you were Russian.
Communism was a red herring, Naomi.
If I had been a communist working in the State Department, that would have been like the villain of the...
Yeah, no, super justified for 98.
1954.
98 is when Jen did the role.
Okay.
Yeah, I had this little song that I sang.
Oh, Jen.
During it.
Jen.
Yeah.
Whomst I love so much. Can you sing a little bit of the song?
It's sort of homophobic in that, like,
Jen,
I was
all
written
homophobic
as a...
here. No, just kidding. No. I'm joking. We're not homophobic. I desperately need to know. We've been together since 99, like a year after you played this part, or a year and a half maybe. You sang this song before we got together, I've known you played this part. I've never heard this song.
Haven't you?
No.
Well, it's pretty bad. I used to have a lot of pretty bad little jingles that I would sing out in school. I was very...
I want it.
Did you write the song?
No. Okay. It was just
then you're hardly responsible.
No, I wrote... I mean, I came up with the lyrics for this
basically
jingle.
Writing the song, Jen. No, understand.
No, because it was... it's a riff on Mr. Clean.
And you sang this in the play?
No. It was just around set.
That makes it significantly better. But because I remember doing like that, but like, Jen, if you don't sing this.
Okay.
I like that you're not responsible for a consequence.
You know, I will go ahead and say this. If you don't feel comfortable to go ahead and sing it on our podcast, I'm going to go ahead and give you a get out of jail free card.
You are welcome to make any board game reference you want. We should just throw random board game references. Like you say something wrong, you're just like, Jenga.
Well, you put me through quite a twister on this one, but.
Well, this is quite an operation.
All right. So it went like this.
You do have a get out of jail free card on this. I agree with Lydia. If you really don't want to, don't. But regardless, I am hearing this song before the end of the day.
All right, here goes. And everybody gets to, all 20 of you, including our moms.
Yeah.
Whatever. Okay, the first part of it, I'm not quite sure I remember correctly because it doesn't fit right well with the, but so it's like Mr. Green solves his mysteries without dismay. See, it doesn't fit quite well.
It's fine.
Mr. Green is very happy because he's Russian and not gay. Mr. Green. Which it's very interesting to note that I do consider myself the gay. Like, I am.
I get it. I found myself married to a woman. I get it. A queer adjacent is what I've been called, but it feels more gay than not.
I would consider myself on, because of my trans identity, to be on the, so there you go. That was the song.
Mr. Green
solves his mysteries without dismay.
Mr. Green is...
There was only one Mr. Green at the beginning, but I just was trying to remember what it was.
Say it one more time.
Mr. Green solves his mysteries without dismay. Mr. Green is very happy because he's Russian and not gay.
You know, given the option of being Russian or gay, I didn't have anywhere to go with that.
Why not both?
I actually, like, every time a news headline, I know this is off topic and we will get to the movie right away, but like every time I see a headline that's like, gays in this community are rising up, I'm like, yay! So like the times that I've seen Russian persons, because they're in an oppressive government who does not support and often maligns, if not kills straight out gay people, like when they fight against it, I'm like, yes, you know? I don't know where to send my money for that, but I do care, right? And so like every time somebody's like, hey, we're donating to the Trevor Project, or hey, you know, like, you can now get married in XYZ company. I'm like, country. I'm like, yes. I feel like it's a victory.
Well, it is.
Yeah. I know that it's not, as a cis female, like, I don't feel like it's necessarily my like 100% victory, but I feel like, oh, like my ally lights go up and I'm like, you know those lizards that look like that dinosaur from Jurassic Park who go, right? With their neck flares where they're like, that's how I feel when they're like, gay rights win in, I'm like, yes.
Or like a peacock, you might say.
I do feel like a very proud peacock.
Yes.
Mm. Oh, I guess a peacock would be like, ah.
So do we have any Sean facts?
Gimme.
Yeah, we do have some. The first introduction that Sean has is really just a really quick summary of the different parts to the ending for the film. So we'll maybe touch on that if we don't really, you know, cover it well ourselves.
No. Us not covering the ending of a film well 6 hours from now?
So this movie was budgeted at $15 million in 1985, if you can believe it. That's bigger than the budget of Star Wars, the original Star Wars movie, I believe. I think that was around $10 million. But did not make its money back. Its official box office was hit around $14.6 million. So it lost a little bit in the box office.
Oh.
But it would have probably made its money back and then some, because I still hear people talking about it to this day. Yeah. They had even talked about like a remake a couple of years ago.
Like Long Game, I'm for sure, because this is certainly a movie that you would have wanted to rent on VHS. And 85, okay, yeah, you'd have to, Long Game, you'd have to wait a decade, but like, I would have rented it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Carrie Fisher was originally contracted to portray Miss Scarlet. She withdrew to enter treatment for a drug and alcohol addiction.
God bless. We didn't deserve Carrie Fisher.
No.
Jonathan Lynn's first choice for the role of Wadsworth was Leonard Rossiter, but he died before filming commenced.
Who the hell is Ron Lasseter?
Leonard Rossiter.
and more so, who is Leonard Rossiter? Who? Who is that guy?
I'm looking it up.
Who is he, Lydia?
I'm looking it up. Ron Lasseter?
No, Leonard. Wow. You know, they proved that like goldfish have memories that are longer than 2 seconds. So I can't even say I have like the memory of a goldfish anymore. I have to be like, I have no memory.
How do you spell his last name?
R-O-S-S-I-T-E-R.
R-O-S-S-I-T-E-R.
Like rotisserie?
Like, I got it at Rossiter.
R-O-U-S's. Rossiter's of unusual size. Okay, so he was a doctor in 2001 Space Odyssey. He was on Oliver, the Pink Panther. He was in, oh my goodness, what?
Oh, so like pencil mustache type guy with like a slick hairdo?
Something like that. Oh, this was a television series. He was in a miniseries about Alice in Wonderland, which made me think of something. Let's see. Yeah, I think he's like super British. I'm going to go with super British.
Yeah. Awesome.
Jonathan Lynn also had a second choice that wasn't Tim Curry.
No.
His second choice was Rowan Atkinson.
I mean, in the 80s.
Who's Rowan Atkinson?
That's Mr. Bean.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, Black Adder is how I have Rowan Atkinson in my head. Like, I appreciate Mr. Bean. I identify with Black Adder.
They were having the same issue. They decided that he wasn't well known enough at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm terrible with his name, but I'm terrible with everyone's name, except for really random ass.
Like Tim Curry and Madeline Kahn.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I would not trade Tim Curry for anything. He's perfect.
Absolutely perfect in this role. Like, I would not necessarily give anyone a full pass, but like Tim Curry made this role.
Oh, yeah.
There are other notes from Sean that could be fit somewhere pretty close to the beginning scenes. So I'll insert those. But I did also want to mention kind of a callback to what I just talked about like 10 minutes ago. The episode, there was an episode of Psych titled 100 Clues that featured Clue stars Martin Mull, Christopher Lloyd, and Leslie Ann Warren as suspects in a series of murders at a mansion. And in this episode, in addition to many jokes and themes in homage to the film, includes multiple endings in which the audience, separately for the East and West Coast viewerships, decide who is the real killer, and the episode was dedicated to the memory of Madeline Kahn.
First of all, I didn't know she was dead. I'm not surprised. I don't know that a lot of people are dead. But, Jen, guess what we're doing tonight?
We're going to have to track down that Psych episode.
Yeah, we're going to watch that Psych episode for real.
I own a Psych t-shirt I found at a pawn shop, a secondhand shop. And I was like, I really like this series. Gus is my guy. I used to come home and be like, hey, Jen, can we watch Gus?
I love how the series ends where, when Sean gets married to, like, his longstanding girlfriend or love interest for the entire show.
Detective, whatever her face is.
Right. And they like, and he's just like, will you marry me? Of course, Gus has to come along. And she's like, yeah, of course I'll marry you. And yeah, Gus can come along because they're like this package deal. I mean, like, as far as bromances go that are like super platonic, it's hard to really ship just Sean and Gus together. But like, as far as platonic relationships go, I'm just like the raptor thing.
Raptor,
the lizard thing that you said about.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you go. Whoosh.
Yeah,
you go whoosh, or yeah, whatever. I'm super down. Like, it makes you feel a way. I got yelled at for using the... I was online. And so yelled just means extra exclamation points and a private message directed at me. I used the word bromance for a guy I saw supporting another guy. And the guy was like, I hate that term. It's terrible. And I was like, at the time, I was taken aback because I didn't think of it as a negative, right? Because I was like, when I say bromance, I don't mean romantic.
Right.
I think intense emotional connection between two, like, same-sexed persons or same-gendered persons who have, like, an intense emotional connection. They don't need to be romantic. Like, in the same way that Eugene Levy and Catherine
O'Hare...
O'Hare. They dated for a second. It did not work out. Or they tried to date or something. But it doesn't matter because their on-screen intensity is phenomenal. And they have had an incredible working relationship for decades now. They were not meant to be romantic. I would consider that even a bromance.
Well, it's strictly platonic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because they do better in a platonic relationship.
Yeah, they were never meant to be together. Off screen.
Yeah.
On screen, like...
They have a lot of chemistry together.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know where we were. You guys want to start talking about the movie?
I'm all for talking about the movie.
Yes.
Opening credits.
Hey, applauders. Are you ready to... Hey, applauders, welcome to this month's podcast. My name is Naomi McQuaid. We're going to talk about the movie Clue.
An hour into recording.
It's my fault. I got sucked into talking about me doing it as a play.
Oh, you're so cute, though.
But it wasn't just that. I mean, there was a lot of preamble, and we always do a lot of preamble. I don't think it's anyone's person's fault.
Yeah, and considering the fewer page of notes that I normally have, like, we're going to get through this real fast.
Yeah.
Okay. She said, fingers crossed.
Opening credits.
Okay, isn't this correct? The cast list is in alphabetical order.
I did not note that, but sure, yeah, I'll go with that.
Thank you very... Like, I'm for being... I know that the alphabet is in an arbitrary order. Like, it doesn't... There is no reason for it to go A, B, C, D, except for one guy decided it, and we were all like, cool.
Yeah.
We're going to put that in all the filing cabinets, right? That's how it works. Seriously, that's how it works. But... I feel like, okay, wait, if, okay, follow me down this rabbit hole. If, no, not a rabbit hole in the first second. Sorry. But if, I can't think this far ahead. If Willow was listed alphabetically, would...
Warwick Davis?
Would Warwick Davis, okay, by last name, be listed before...
Val Kilmer?
Val Kilmer.
No. Yeah.
If by last name.
But he wasn't. Val Kilmer was listed before Warwick.
Yeah, but they weren't alphabetical. If it had been alphabetical.
By last name.
I would have been much more happy.
Yeah.
There are several ways that movies usually do the...
Opening credits?
The credits. They'll either be alphabetical, as you mentioned, or they'll be in order of appearance, or as Willow was, as billing. Those are usually the three different ways.
Billing meaning who's got the bigger clout.
Yeah.
Like by billing.
Yeah.
The other ones seem more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So basically the opening credits is just this car that's driving. And if I may, it was a dark and stormy night, or almost dark and stormy.
It was incredibly all of that. How many movies that I love feature driving up to a mansion on a dark and stormy night?
A lot?
Like a ton.
Good.
I've mentioned them already, or I'd list them again, but we can. House on Haunted Hill. Haunting at Hill House is a TV show that was fantastic. That had that too. Rocky Horror Picture Show. Fantastic. Bring it in. Like these movies. Mm-hmm. They're always so good.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
And this one actually shows Tim Curry very early on after the credits come through. You see Tim Curry coming out of this really nice limousine that's when it says it's New England 1954.
Correct.
And then we see him come out of the.
The only man who could pull off a derby hat, I swear. He just looks a man. Like, it, first of all, it makes his head look really small because in a lot of other roles, he's got bigger hair. But he looks good.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, no one really can pull off a derby hat, but he does admirably well.
Right. And there are dogs that are barking, and he goes and throws them some meat.
Yeah, some bones. Are they German shepherds?
Yeah.
And
there's like a Rottweiler.
Yeah, later on.
Yeah.
Which random dog.
Yeah. Random dog that wasn't tied up, by the way.
Cause
he, like, makes a point to not just, like, throw meat or bones at him, but he does go ahead and like tighten up their leash.
Yes. For a second, when we were watching it, I thought that he was letting them loose, and Lydia's like, no, he's just tightening it up. I'm like, good idea. Mm-hmm. But then he notices something on his shoe.
Yeah. And this is like the first of the running gags.
This is the first time it goes down in this.
And so he goes over to the door and he like smells something and lifts up his shoe. Poop joke.
Yeah, we get a running poop gag. Every time he lets somebody in, they do this sniffy face. Madeline Kahn's is the best one.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's like, I won't let him know that I'm sniffing.
Yeah. And he tries to scrape it off, but the thing with dog poop is he can't.
Biggest pet peeve, it'll make me throw a pair of shoes away. I really hate stepping in dog poop.
So he goes into the house and he puts some stuff aside. He's getting things ready. Mm-hmm. He goes in to see a woman who is like pouring drinks.
And she's cleaning a glass and she's head bopping to some music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. We do hear music.
Yeah. He turns off the record player that she's listening to. So what he essentially does is he checks in with Yvette. She's Babette in my notes.
Okay.
and then he checks in with the cook, and then he starts receiving guests.
Right. And the first guest that comes in is
Colonel Mustard.
Yes. And he is the first one who's like, you know, like smelling something. He's like, yeah. And after Tim Curry takes his coat and everything, they kind of talk a little bit to give the audience a little bit of an idea of their relationship.
Yeah, like how he ended up here. I got this mysterious invitation. You should go by the pseudonym that you've gotten on your invitation to maintain anonymity.
Right.
And then he escorts him to the study, and then he receives the next guest.
Right, which is Mrs. White, played by Madeline Kahn.
Who, if I could preserve in a little glass case in my heart, I would. Mm-hmm. I wish I had a tiny grain of the grace and beauty that is Madeline Kahn. Mm-hmm. Like, how is she so sharp and funny at the same time? Like, she delivers everything with such conviction, and she's just on point visually, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Never wrong. Like, do you remember, did you watch Young Frankenstein?
I've seen it like years ago. I haven't rewatched it.
Okay, but when she gets banged by Frankenstein's monster, and she's like, so he would like, when they banged, he would be like, and he like hummed because he got like part of somebody else's brain. And then she starts humming the same thing. I was like, how are you in the hay humming after getting banged by a monster and you're still classy AF? How, Madeline Kahn? How? That's all I have to say about Madeline Kahn.
I don't have an answer.
Until later.
I don't have any answer for you, but I completely understand your questioning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just if I get to be reincarnated, first, one of my mom's animals. Second of all, Madeline Kahn.
So Madeline Kahn is the reincarnation of a Bendigo. All right.
Okay. So yeah. Come through as me so I understand the logic. Yeah. Be my mom's cat, Abendigo.
You know I would be.
Plotters, let me talk to you about my brother's cat, Abendigo.
We have been recording for a day now.
Okay. Anyways, I'm my mother's cat, Abendigo. I'm Madeline Kahn. Me, Abendigo Kahn.
Works.
Okay. Hey, guess who comes in third?
Don't we actually see someone stuck on the side of the road?
Well, that's probably true.
Yeah, we see a woman in a green dress, and she's like, her car's busted.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sees this other car coming down the road.
Uh-huh.
And then she like, her hood is all the way up. And so she does that whole thing where she's like bent over, and then she like flicks her foot out.
Yeah, okay. But that works.
Mm-hmm. It worked.
It worked in the film. It works in real life. You just, I mean, like, you put that out there and you're going to get somebody to help you with your car. I remember one time Jen and I were stuck by the side of the road, and I was in full makeup to go to a Halloween party, and a guy pulls over to like help us, except like the car needed to be towed. Like, he could not help us. And it was Halloween, so I had like full white makeup and like giant eyelashes, and I can pull off some makeup sometimes. And as he walked up to the car, he was like, oh, let me help you. He looks and he sees Jen and he's like, Remember, then we walked to the Motel 6 and got like a phone call. Do you remember? It was a dumb day.
Weren't we in that car for a really long time?
Yeah, like hours. I called like two different tow companies, And like one was like, yeah, you know, I'll be there in like 20 minutes. Like 2 hours later, I called the second one. I was like, bruh. And they showed up in like less than an hour. But we walked up from the Kent Des Moines exit to, you know, the Kent Des Moines exit, right? Like I walked up to the Motel 6, sat in their lobby, used their phone, walked back to the car, sat there for a couple hours, disappointed that poor Mexican dude, and then walked back up and called a second tow company and walked back to the car. It was a terrible night, but I had full horror makeup.
Like ring girl?
Not ring girl. I was like a dead girl. Like I just went like super pale faced. Like I wasn't emulating anything. I just wanted to be kind of dead. And so I was like pale faced with like, I put on false eyelashes and like, and so I looked like, you know, like perfect dead, like Corpse Bride type dead.
Right.
So like sexy, but like
dead.
Yeah. Like okay. Dead-ish.
Yeah.
Like eye zombie.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Like f***able, but dead.
Mm-hmm. So, this turns out to be...
Wait, like Madeline Kahn?
Yeah.
Very f***able, but dead?
Yeah.
Okay.
All I've ever dreamed of being. I'm sorry. So we got Colonel Mustard. We got Mrs. White.
Oh, and before we actually go on, it's important to note that Yvette, the maid, when she is being introduced to Mrs. White, Mrs. White visibly knows her. Like she makes this sort of like, so for the small little moments that Madeline Kahn does that really like emphasize her character, mm-hmm. she does these little like the tiny, tiny little like moments where yes. you can tell, oh, she knows who she is.
Yes. She has these, we could call them micro inflections.
Mm-hmm.
Inflections, maybe that's not the right word. But like micro effects. Like this film has macro and micro all over it. Like you'll see such a tiny little shift, which is like a sign of really good scripting and directing. Because you'll have like a little thing that means kind of something. And then you'll see a big thing that can mean nothing. But Madeline Kahn, I think, is a master of that because mm-hmm. she sees Yvette. And if you've seen the film, you're like, oh, yeah, no, she's just like, she's mad at the sexy French maid looking lady. But if you know the film, you see her kind of turn her nose and be a little stiff. And you're like,
right.
Madeline Kahn. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Kahn.
Mrs. White.
Yes.
Does a really good job. And so we then cut to this random lady whose car's broken down and then she's getting help from this random guy.
They don't actually introduce themselves as he gives her a ride up because they're going to the same place. Like they right. have the same invitation to the same place.
Right. And they do kind of mention that. And so they mention it. So it's like, oh, okay. So this is a party. These are just some other people who are showing up. And then in my notes, I have the next person to arrive is Mrs. Peacock.
Correct.
And then we have Mr. Green.
Correct.
And then when these last two people show up, it's full on raining. Guy gets out, pulls out his umbrella, and he goes over to the other side, helps the lady out.
He puts his arm around her waist and like guides her in. And part of me loves that kind of chivalry. And part
if
of me
know
is like,
them.
Exactly. I was like, I don't. I attended a service yesterday and I had an opened back dress and I thought I looked pretty cute. But also at this service, I got a lot of hugs. Hey, fully vaccinated, go get your drugs, right? But like, I got a lot of hugs from a number of people that I'm not terribly intimate with. And a lot of them touched my back to be like consolatory.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, right. I hate when people touch my body without asking.
Mm-hmm.
I have in my life, no lie, three-ish people, possibly four people. Maybe on the verge of five people in the total of this earth who are allowed to touch my body without talking to me about it first. One is my mother.
Right.
One is Jen.
Right.
One is my oldest friend on earth, Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
One is my second, like, bestie, Madeline. Mm-hmm. Right. And probably you, Lydia. You could probably give me a hug because I trust you.
Okay.
You're allowed to touch my body without talking to me about it because I trust you to not do anything weird, gross, or suspicious.
All right.
Nobody else. And yesterday I had a lot of people rubbing the empty square of the dress of my back. And there's no way to address that. So when I watched, and this is, I'm bringing it back. This is not me having full therapy with you right now. But like, as I'm watching who we learned to be Professor Plum helping Miss Scarlet into the house, like mm-hmm. the idea is he's keeping her close to his body by holding her waist and holding the umbrella over her that they both stay as dry as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. I was like,
mutant-esque.
Right. Well, and when they actually get to a place where they don't need the umbrella, he also kind of touches her without asking a girl.
Straight up grabs for some booty. And yeah. You, sir, you did not pay price of admission.
Which is important for her.
You didn't, nope.
Right. So.
Okay. So now, hey, look, mostly everybody's at this party. We have the butler who arrived first. The maid and the cook were already at the mansion.
Correct.
We got Colonel Mustard, Mrs. White, Mrs. Peacock, Mr. Green, Professor Plum, Miss Scarlet. And we're all in the study.
Well, are they in the study at this point?
They're getting champagne. I think it's in the study.
I think they're in the billiard room. They're not in the billiard room because that's where the recording is. So yeah, they're probably in the study drinking champagne out of a decanter.
You know why that makes me mad?
Please.
Okay, look. I ain't a fancy but I know what things are. And a decanter is a way to display alcohol in a way that's very pretty. Mm-hmm. The thing about champagne is that it's got bubbles. And so from the time that you open the bottle, it has a short expiration date. You're not going to open a bottle of champagne and then tell me 2 days later that you want to continue drinking the champagne because it is merely white wine at that point. It has lost all the bubbles. So the fact that this champagne is poured out of a decanter makes me deeply upset because if not all the bubbles are gone, mm-hmm. most of the bubbles are gone.
Right.
And what's the point of champagne without no bubbles?
Right. Well, and it looks like it's champagne in the actual glasses, but later on when we actually see it in the decanter, it looks more like a brandy.
Well, they also have a cognac. There is so much alcohol in this film. Okay, so they get served champagne, it's yellow. Then they get, I would imagine, a wine, which is disturbingly pink. Like, it's probably a rosé in theory, but it just looks grossly pink, like some college student girls drink. And then they retire for brandy. and then the whole cognac thing happens. And then, like, I need a drink happens after that. The booze, although very prevalent, not consistent.
Right.
I don't like it.
I have some Sean facts about the description of these characters.
Oh, okay, cool.
The women in this movie wear the opposite colors of their namesake.
Oh, like color wheel opposite?
Yeah, like Miss Scarlet wears green.
That is an opposite.
Mrs. White wears black.
Opposite.
Although the inside of her coat flashes a white, as Sean notes. Mrs. Peacock wears gold and orange, though she has a peahen feather in her hairpiece. And on to the men, just so we can kind of get a description of what they're wearing. Mr. Green wears no green at all. Instead, he's wearing a blue suit.
Right.
With a red tie. Colonel Mustard wears a dark brown suit and a light cream overcoat. You could have like a dark mustard, couldn't you? Like a burnt mustard?
That's a deli mustard, if my foodie self is correct.
All right. And Professor Plum wears a burgundy vest and gray suit. Here's the interesting part that I didn't notice in Sean's notes here.
Woo woo!
Each character's car matches the color of his or her name and the game piece.
Nice.
I didn't know that. Random phone call guy shows up in a random phone call colored.
I have
them listed by name as best I can, but there are one, two, three, four additional characters. Four additional after our next.
There's like after at this point, there are four other people who show up to the mansion.
There are five.
Five?
Because we don't have who's brought them all together yet. So we have moved from the study to the dining hall, which is a surprisingly small room, right?
Right.
It's got a serving window from the kitchen until the serving area, which is, I think, architecturally something I very much like. But the room is very small considering the scope of the entire mansion. And Yvette. Mm-hmm. We were almost there. Yvette and Wadsworth. Mm-hmm. What? He's the butler. He's Tim to me.
Yeah.
They both start serving people in the dining hall, right? They mm-hmm. have like a celery soup or something weird like that. And they're continuously being served. I think that consistently, I feel like the women are being served by Yvette.
I don't know, because there are times where she's serving some men and they're looking at her tiddlywinks.
Okay, so here's something that's really weird from the 3 months I worked in the service industry. You serve from the right and you take away from the left.
Okay.
And I was trying really hard to follow it. Like, I was like, oh, I know this. And then I was like, So what you see is consistently she'll turn her boobs towards the women as she's serving the men. And on the screen, the men are to the left as she's serving them. Like, she goes, so her boobs are this way to the left, right? But she's serving to the right, which is correct to the men who are like
looking at her tiddlywinks.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Tiddlywinks is a board game reference.
Oh, shit. which brings us to our episode about,
I don't know,
Phantom of the Paradise, where he was assembling tiddlywink boards.
I'm so glad that you remember that. I was just trying to make board game references, and I was really proud of that one.
Look, I'm all jacks up about this. I'm not trying to monopolize this conversation, okay. But
anyway,
monopolize.
Yeah.
That's life.
Okay.
Podcast against humanity. Here we are.
They all start serving the food, and Mrs. Peacock just has to go ahead and start talking.
You know what? Even as much as I wish I was Madeline Kahn, I am Mrs. Peacock. I want to smooth out your social interaction. When she says, well, in my experience, I'm very good at smoothing relations, but because of my husband's work, I'm just very good at hosting parties. And I like to make sure that, you know, and if none of us are talking, then none of us can get to know each other. And as a consummate blatherer. Same, girl. Same. Sorry. If I feel like anyone feels awkward, I will throw myself down on that slab and try to make it easier. So none of these people particularly want to talk. Some of them recognize each other, some of them don't. And she's like, let's have a conversation. We'll talk about what we can, but like hold back what we can't, because according to the whatever, like.
But that was like one of the rules, is that they couldn't talk about where they were or what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And
who they were.
Yeah. And but like the gist of this whole scene is that one, Mrs. Peacock is like eating her food and she's like, oh, my goodness, this is so delicious. And that was like the kind of like it's just something that came up in conversation. But everyone at this table works in Washington, D.C. So they either get they either get funding from the government or they work directly with the government. That's the important thing in this scene.
Yeah, I feel like that comes out pretty clear.
Well, they say that directly in the text. Sorry.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So then, so now we have another character. Character number 10. Character number 10 shows up.
Right.
And it is
Mr. Body.
So Mr. Body comes in. Okay. So he comes in and he is obviously a douche nozzle, right? And like Yvette serves him, boobs towards him, I would say.
Right. But he's all like, I don't want that. And like,
he dismisses the soup course. He dismisses the main course. And when she serves him the main course, he's all like, I already ate.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Wadsworth is like, would any of you like fruit or dessert? Well, if not, let us retire for like cigars and brandy in the study.
Mm-hmm.
And I will explain why all of you are here.
I think we hear off in the distance where Wadsworth is, where Wadsworth locks the door and Mr. Body's like, you're going to give me that key, right? And he's just sort of like, over my dead body. Because that becomes important later on, because when they all go into the study, Wadsworth holds up this envelope and the camera says, S. Wadsworth, open after dinner. Like, it's like you find out it's like it had to have been like a note written to himself.
Yes. But we all are super guilty of notes written to ourselves
in big manila envelopes.
Not gonna lie.
Yeah. So Wadsworth takes them all into the study and everybody sits down in different places and he's just like, I'm here to tell you why you're here.
We've now concluded part one of our walkthrough of 1985's Clue, A Plotter. But we still have two more weeks left to put all of the pieces together in this classic whodunit comedy. This month, we're celebrating the true crime genre with some of our favorite shows. And we have some outstanding podcasts to recommend to you. If you're into well-researched topics and spine-chilling stories, check out Reverie True Crime with host Paige Elmore. And for a wild ride through paranormal and supernatural stories and true crime, check out Nopeville with Christine and Jen. You can find links to these great shows in this week's release description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and that person from that room who did that thing, Jen. If you're like me, you can't stand not knowing something. For example, exactly which words we bleeped out of this episode. Well, I've got the answer for you, and it only costs $1 per month. Why not become an official applauder and patron of Shocked and Applaud? Simply click the heart icon at the top of shockedandapplaud.com to learn how to get our full catalog of unbleeped episodes, released to you before anyone else gets them. It's such a bargain, you'll feel like you're getting away with that thing you did once that no one knows about but you. We'll be back in 1 week for part two of our walkthrough of this fantastic ensemble comedy. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.